Major funding for NJ Spotlight News is provided in part by NJM Insurance Group, serving the insurance needs of residents and businesses for more than 100 years, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey, an independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association, and by the PSCG Foundation.
Tonight on NJ Spotlight News, breaking news, the judge rules there will be two separate federal corruption trials for the senior senator and his wife.
There was a lot of back and forth, as you probably know, but I think the ultimate conclusion was reached because of the uncertainty.
Plus, a potential bias crime investigation continues at Rutgers after their Islamic center is the target of vandalism on the final day of Ramadan.
Silroo was one of the few places, if not the only, where Muslims truly felt comfort and safety on campus. And now that has been taken from us.
Also, a warning, your Amazon order may be delayed as a labor battle between the internet giant and its flex drivers unfolds.
This is a workforce that's ignored. Their security issues are ignored. Their working conditions are ignored.
And take me out to the ballpark. Patterson officials unveil the Hinchliffe Stadium Museum, showcasing what was once the centerpiece of the Negro Baseball League. NJ Spotlight News begins right now.
From NJPBS Studios, this is NJ Spotlight News with Brianna Venosi.
Good evening and thanks for joining us this Thursday night. I'm Brianna Venosi. We begin with breaking news. U.S. Senator Bob Menendez's federal corruption trial will begin May 6th as scheduled, but without his wife. A Manhattan federal judge today ordered separate trials for the couple who were accused of taking part in a bribery scheme after lawyers for Nadine Menendez asked for a delay because of an unexpected serious medical condition that will possibly require weeks of significant recovery, making it difficult for her to stand trial. Judge Sidney Stein today said the lack of clarity around when Nadine Menendez will be well enough to move forward is one reason he opted to sever the trials. She also needs to find new lawyers because her current ones could be called as witnesses in the case. Prosecutors were opposed to splitting the trial, saying they'll essentially have to present the same evidence twice. But attorneys for the senior senator said he wanted a speedy trial to preserve Menendez's ability to run for a seat. The judge today also denied motions to dismiss the indictment outright and transfer the case to New Jersey. A tentative separate trial date for Nadine Menendez is scheduled for July 8th. Attorney and former federal prosecutor Brian Whistler says it may be a benefit to the senator.
That's right. When a husband and a wife are tried together, it's not atypical for a jury to look upon the spouse perhaps with a little more favor, right? And if they have any doubts about culpability, feel content to convict, you know, the husband and let the wife go. That is not going to be present here. And I think that probably cuts in favor of the senator.
Muslim college students at Rutgers University say they feel unsafe after the Islamic Center on campus was vandalized. Police say the break-in occurred Tuesday night during Eid, which celebrates the end of Ramadan. They found a ripped Palestinian flag and art pieces with Quran verses destroyed. The incident is being investigated as a criminal act of bias and hatred. As Melissa Rose Cooper reports, it comes as tensions have been rising on campus over the war in Gaza.
Silroo was one of the few places, if not the only, where Muslims truly felt comfort and safety on campus. And now that has been taken from us.
Feelings of disappointment Nora Asker now has after learning the Center for Islamic Life at Rutgers University had been vandalized Tuesday night during Eid. The holiday marks the end of Ramadan and is one of the most celebratory times on the Islamic calendar.
I received the news of this disgusting and disturbing attack yesterday morning, the same time I usually wake up and greet my parents and start celebrating our beloved and sacred holiday, Eid. Instead, like many Muslim students, I watched in horror as we saw what happened to a space so near and dear to our hearts.
The center isn't just a religious space. For more than a decade, students have been able to come here for educational programming, as well as counseling and other support.
Our physical presence on this campus is evidence of, and a message to everyone in this university, that our community belongs here.
But for Atiyah Aftab, chair of the Board of Trustees for the center, the vandalism is just one of the latest attacks on the Muslim community since the war in Gaza began.
Why is it that the days after October 7th, our chaplain was deemed unwelcome and his presence to some was seen as threatening because of his call to humanize Palestinian life?
Now members of the Center for Islamic Life are demanding Rutgers do more to ensure the safety of its Muslim community.
Unfortunately, one of the experiences of being a Muslim in America or being a Muslim in a public position is that we do occasionally, us and our student groups, receive threats. And they get reported every single time. And we do what we can to take the steps appropriately. But really what we wanted to say with our statement is twofold. Yes, it's the security concern that we need to do better to secure ourselves, but it's also the idea that an action like this was emboldened because we didn't communicate in a public setting appropriately enough to recognize the Muslim experience, to recognize the voices that are sometimes silenced.
Rutgers maintains they take every claim of bias, intolerance, and hate seriously, conducting thorough investigations when warranted. A spokesperson adding in a statement, the safety and well-being of our students is a top priority. The RUPD will continue to increase public safety presence on and around campus. Additional campus safety resources are available to students.
Although we appreciate the support shown by them on Eid, the Rutgers administration's failure to address these concerns earlier has not only allowed, but has affirmed the recurrence of further hateful acts towards our Muslim, Arab, and especially Palestinian students here on campus. Now is not the time for empty gestures. Now is the time for action. We urge the Rutgers administration to take concrete steps in order to ensure the safety and security of our Muslim community here at Rutgers.
Governor Murphy and State Attorney General Matt Plotkin both say they've launched a criminal investigation into the incident, and although the vandalism has left members of the center sad, they say it's not enough to keep their voices from being heard. For NJ Spotlight News, I'm Melissa Rose Cooper.
A group of Collingswood High School students are facing potential bias crime charges after they allegedly organized a white student union in response to the school's black student union. That, according to the school superintendent, evolved into something more characteristic of a hate group. This isn't the first bias incident to be alleged in the small Camden County suburb. The town has been dealing with escalating racial tensions for years that have more recently come to a head. Matt Skoufalos has been covering it all as the founder and editor of NJ Penn, and he joins me with the latest. Matt, so good to have you on the show. Really disturbing of what's been happening at the Collingswood High School. Can you give us an update on how these students have been disciplined, what they did exactly?
Sure. I think to give you an update, I'd kind of have to go back to a year ago when there were student walkouts at Collingswood High School because minority students were protesting what they described as bias treatment by their teachers, by the staff, administration. And what we've seen now is a year after that, we're actually marking evidence of stuff that it's also coming from their peers in the school as well. So a year ago, there was this big student walkout where they were trying to draw attention to some of the cultural issues and race issues that are rearing their heads in high school. From that, there was a community meeting where there was a lot of emotional testimonial delivered by people who've lived in town for a long time, talking about their experiences of this nature. There were efforts made since then to form a community-wide DEI committee that's outside of the school that communicates on issues throughout the borough. There was a black student union formed at the high school. Collingswood held its first Juneteenth celebration as a community the following summer. And then now we wrap around back to where we are here about a year later from the stuff that happened in 2023. And what we saw was right before spring break, there were a number of students who were given school discipline because they apparently have organized a white student union, which at some point, I guess, was meant to be an ironic response to the black student union. And then Superintendent Fred McDowell told me they stopped being whatever you could call a joke, even if that is such a thing with matters like this, and just started functioning, in his words, as a traditional kind of a hate group. And so a couple days before spring break, there was there were slurs that were defaced on another student's car. That student is white. Kids I talked to believe that's a case of mistaken identity on whose vehicle it was. And aside from that, there were also incidents of bullying, harassment, racial intimidation that were made by white students against black students, is what the allegations say.
Are these students, Matt, facing charges for any of this?
So it's being investigated by the Camden County Prosecutor's Office. It's being investigated by Collinswood Police. Right now, the prosecutor's office has just said that it's an open investigation and they won't comment. They're still gathering information. Superintendent McDowell says to me it is sort of this gray area where they're going to have to determine if they bring charges if the defendants choose not to press charges. If the defendants were to choose to press, they could probably bring charges immediately.
What's behind what seems like now many years of racial tension in Collingswood? When you talk to people who are from that area, they see it as a pretty progressive place, and yet we know through these students' and families' testimony, as you mentioned, that they've been facing incidents like these for years.
I always tell everybody that Collingswood is a cipher. And it is what you want it to be for whatever group you happen to be, whether that is an ethnic group, a racial group, a sexuality or gender orientation. Collingswood can be a proxy for whatever you want to put your dreams onto. And I think a lot of people do that. And so what the school chalks this up to is gentrification in the neighborhood. And if you go back over the census data for the past decade, you're seeing wealthier families moving into town. It's getting less white demographically. But I think also you have to acknowledge that this stuff has been happening and people are not really meeting it for whatever reason, in whatever way that would have an impact. Going back to, I'm going to say 2011 or 2012, there was a story about a basketball coach named Joe McLaughlin who was removed of his coaching duties. He sued the district and said it was because he wasn't playing enough white players, according to what he claimed were his administrative duties or his instructions. And then from there, at that meeting, you had people coming up at that time saying, when I was a young kid riding my bike through this town, I would have rocks thrown at me because I was black. There were other people at the meeting last year who talked about their children growing up in a town where they had never had any sort of gang involvement, being told that their kids in elementary school were flashing gang signs. There are black kids who say that there are a majority white, almost uniformly white staff that disciplines them differently than they discipline the white kids. You have to believe people when they're saying that these are their lived experiences. And you also have to acknowledge if this is in your face every day, it's not getting better. Whatever the issues are, they're still persistent. Part of it, I imagine, has to do with whatever the culture is in the school. Part of it has to do with the climate from the homes. It could all be aggravated by the way that people interact post-pandemic.
Sure.
A lot of parasocial experiences, a lot of toxic internet culture carry over.
Right.
But I did actually speak to two students last night, as a matter of fact, who talked about what they described as a casual attitude around use of racial slurs by their white counterparts. And basically what they said is it seems like female students get the worst of it from white male students. If they're called out on it, these students may shrink from the things that they were saying. They often don't do it around other male students or in groups where teachers might be within earshot, but it's an ongoing thing where these students describe this beginning even in elementary school.
Wow. very widespread. Matt Skoufalos is the editor and founder of NJ Penn, which covers Camden County. Matt, thank you so much.
Thanks, Brianna.
Amazon's Flex drivers are the latest workers to speak out about unsafe labor conditions with the online giant. They say Amazon is indiscriminately cutting their pay and disregarding safety for drivers working in New Jersey. Flex workers use their own vehicles to deliver packages for Amazon. It's a gig job, similar to Uber or Lyft. And according to recent reports, some have been met with threats and even violence. Senior correspondent Joanna Gagas has the story.
Amazon Flex drivers rallied in front of an Amazon fulfillment center in Woodland Park today, demanding better wages and improved safety conditions while they deliver packages.
2 years ago, I was getting paid $160, sometimes even $190. We went down from $160 to $120. Then now we're all the way down to $86 for 4 hour blocks. Not only that, they're also sending us out there. Instead of giving us the blocks that we had before with 32 stops, now we're getting up to 50 stops for that amount of money.
I have a son. He suffers from autism, so I used to do the night route where I used to make $200. And I used to do that at night because I could spend the day with my son. But right now, because of the wages going down, I'm not able to continue to.
Drivers like Evelyn and Esther Nunez say they were never told their delivery rates would change. They just saw the numbers dropping off over the last few months. And as Flex drivers, they use their own cars and are not reimbursed for their travel.
Amazon Flex drivers are a group that is overlooked and underestimated. Amazon is the largest employer in the state of New Jersey, but these workers so far don't count because Amazon has decided to call them independent contractors. This is a workforce that's ignored. Their security issues are ignored. Their working conditions are ignored.
Many of their deliveries are now happening overnight at 3 or 4 a.m., leaving drivers to navigate pitch black roads and homes, or worse, threats from homeowners because they're arriving in the middle of the night in unmarked cars. They're asking for company lamps for their cars.
We had drivers getting threatened, you know, with guns, dogs. Amazon sells a lamp on their app, and it says Amazon Flex. But of course, we have to buy it, you know, so we think that if you're going to have us out there and you're going to have us in certain areas and certain times, then just give us something more so people can actually identify us better.
Some have even faced injury from dog bites or gunshot wounds. And in urban areas, they've been subjected to crimes during those midnight deliveries.
At 3:30 in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, they come up to us where one of the women drivers here was mugged, beaten up, taking away her car.
We reached out to Amazon for comment. They told us they do offer a 24/7 helpline, but employees are directed to call 911 in emergency situations.
What these drivers are asking for is to eliminate those overnight routes. You won't see FedEx making a delivery in the middle of the night of a normal package. You won't see UPS doing that, because it's common sense. It's very obviously dangerous to both clients and customers. And so this group has asked to eliminate those overnight routes and for the daytime routes to make sure that drivers are clearly identified, that customers know that they're coming, and they know who to expect.
The workers attempted to deliver this petition with their request to their managers today. They were met instead with a closed door, managers who wouldn't let them inside or even speak with them.
They know what they're doing. They close the door because they don't want to give you the letter to Amazon.
I feel neglected because I feel like if we're here doing all this stuff for you and this is the way you're treating us, then that's not fair.
Bueno, realmente, para
what they're doing by closing the door on us is showing proof that what we're complaining about is actually factual.
Management closed the door on them, and that's not a surprise to us.
As for these Flex drivers, they say they'll continue to rally and protest until a change is made. In Woodland Park, I'm Joanna Gagas, NJ Spotlight News.
In our Spotlight on Business report, the East Coast answer to Silicon Valley is in Princeton. That's where the governor, tech, and state leaders marked their first step today in launching the state's first formal hub for artificial intelligence to put New Jersey at the forefront of an industry that sparks as much worry as it does wonder. Ted Goldberg reports.
We are the first generation of humans to create machines that can make decisions that have always been made by people. We need to ensure that we don't let the future down.
Microsoft President Brad Smith urged caution and optimism towards artificial intelligence at today's AI summit at Princeton, comparing its wide-ranging impact to that of the printing press. Smith's alma mater is in the process of building an AI hub, working together with the Murphy administration.
I think the creation of an AI hub requires that one bring a community together, bring a state together, bring people together. And when it comes to AI, one of the things I've learned is that is a formidable challenge.
Smith and Murphy say the Garden State could lead the way in building ethical AI, following New Jersey's entrepreneurial past.
Thomas Edison looked to New Jersey, found 35 acres in Menlo Park, and created the first and most important research lab, not just in the United States, but in the world.
We are a state that has cultivated one of the most talented workforces in the entire world. We have in New Jersey more scientists and engineers per square mile than anywhere else on the planet. And we are a state that has an unparalleled track record when it comes to unleashing game-changing inventions.
While Princeton professors have studied AI for decades, President Christopher Eisgruber says the field has exploded in recent years, making now the time to build that hub.
This hub presents an extraordinary opportunity for us to come together to make bold investments that will positively impact the region and the state, as well as the nation and the world.
We're coming together to think ahead about one of the most positive and promising and potentially disruptive developments in human history.
Murphy says AI is already making a difference in Trenton, simplifying the permit process with the DEP and helping families find tax relief.
We want our state government to be a catalyst for bringing together innovators and leaders, like many of you here today, to unlock a new century of hope. From discovering new drugs and medical treatments to developing new personalized educational tools.
This is really a way to develop new treatments to give doctors and surgeons new tools. So we will live longer, so we'll have healthier outcomes for everyone.
Olga Troyanskaya has taught here since 2003. She says AI can help process huge amounts of data and help diagnose diseases, or the likelihood that you'll get one.
We can really start linking every mutation to what it actually means in terms of possibly, you know, predicting whether I have curly hair and you have straight, or whether this is something that's really critical to understanding that I might have be at risk for early onset Alzheimer's. And how do we develop drugs that can actually address this?
Troyanskaya says AI won't replace doctors or surgeons. It'll help them. Other jobs could be at risk as AI becomes smarter and a bigger part of our everyday life. In Princeton, I'm Ted Goldberg, NJ Spotlight News.
On Wall Street, stocks rebounded slightly, showing investor worries eased after Wednesday's surprise uptick in consumer prices. Here's how the markets closed for the day. And make sure to tune in to NJ Business Beat with Raven Santana this weekend. Fresh off an award-winning year, New Jersey's film and TV industry is expanding with surging revenue and new studios. Raven Santana sits down with leaders from what are known as film-ready counties and cities to discuss the Garden State's growth as Hollywood East. Watch it Saturday at 10 a.m. on the NJ Spotlight News YouTube channel. And finally tonight, step inside a treasure trove of baseball history located at one of the last remaining Negro League baseball parks throughout the country. The new Hinchliffe Stadium Museum in Patterson officially opened to the public today, showcasing the artifacts and memorabilia that helped shape the sport. The museum takes you through the heyday of the stadium during the 1930s and 40s Jim Crow era, when crowds would flock to see baseball greats like Josh Gibson and Larry Doby play. Back then, Doby was just a kid from Patterson, denied entry into organized baseball because of the color of his skin. Well, the 4,000 square foot Blackfoot, Charles J. Muth Museum at Hinchliffe has display cases of their original uniforms and bats, tickets and programs. The new center is part of the city's revitalization efforts in the Great Falls region, which included renovating the stadium, the nation's only sporting venue in the national park system. It had fallen into disrepair, but it's now reclaimed its unique foothold in American and, of course, New Jersey history.
My desire for this museum is that it will help, with the help of the Patterson School System, the mayor, the city, BIA, and most importantly, Montclair State University, will help generate new generations of students and kids and people of all people, in fact, discover the full history of Hinchcliffe Stadium and its importance and the role of bringing diversity together in the city of Patterson.
And that's going to do it for us tonight. But don't miss Reporters Roundtable tomorrow. David Cruz talks to Republican Senate Budget Officer Declan O'Scanlan about whether the GOP party can unite on things like OPRA, the party line, and the state budget. Then a panel of local reporters break down this week's political headlines. Watch Roundtable tomorrow at noon on the NJ Spotlight News YouTube channel. I'm Brianna Venosi for the entire NJ Spotlight News team. Thanks for being with us. Have a great evening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
New Jersey Education Association, making public schools great for every child. RWJ Barnabas Health, let's be healthy together. And New Jersey Realtors, the voice of real estate in New Jersey. More information is online at njrealtor.com.
Life is unpredictable. Health insurance shouldn't be. For over 90 years, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey has provided quality, affordable health plans to New Jersey residents. We have served generations of New Jersey families and businesses and are committed to driving innovations that put you at the heart of everything we do. Our members are our neighbors, our friends, and our families. We're here when you need us most. Horizon, proud to be New Jersey.